Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
How are you doing, gents?
Very well. How are you?
Yes. Top of the world.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So we're recording this, but when it goes out, it'll be 364 days to Kilimanjaro. Exactly a year as we're recording today.
Are we happy with our training so far?
8.5 miles yesterday. Left my car at the club on Saturday night. Thought, fuck it, I'll walk for it. So I gets to my car 8.5 miles in. I had to pick it up this morning. Left it again.
You're joking.
You went back in club.
I'll treat myself to a pint. Obviously, I've done all that work. I'll treat myself. I end up having to leave car again.
Fuck's sake, man.
I thought you were going to say you'd lost keys. You left keys at home, not that you got in front of a session.
Keys are in my pocket. But all good fun, innit? All good fun. So, yeah, the training's going quite well.
Danny Webber on Thursday for the Patreons.
Yes, a good one, mate. I didn't realise until somebody pointed it out. Is the first guest to not say one swear word, apparently.
I know, I saw that message, apparently.
Very very eloquent gentleman, isn't he?
Very eloquent.
But I mean, not even one slipped out. Usually one slips out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Nothing. I've not been back and checked. I'm taking his word for it.
Yeah. At the actual time, I didn't realise that he'd not swore.
We've had a few potty mouths on, haven't we?
Oh, aye. Beasley. Beasley will be the pottiest.
There's a nice change.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't really realise it at the time, did we? I didn't anyway. But another good episode, another good one for you Patreons.
Interesting story again. Getting the insight on Sir Alex.
The thing is, you could listen to that crack all day, couldn't you, about Sir Alex? Doesn't matter who it is or what it's about. Anything to do with him is unbelievable. When he was on his arse after he left, was it Portsmouth? And he said, oh, come in, you're a player. Just you'll get treated like a player.
Yeah.
He left Fripton 15 years previous.
Still let him come in and train and that. Obviously, not with the young lads and that, but still incredible, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
We'll get some more of that today from Kirky, hopefully. Some of the big dog information. Benitez, Rafa, what's he like?
Yeah.
They're both the same person then, by the way, Benitez and Rafa. Just to clear that up, Benitez and Rafa, yeah, they're the same guy. The stories on Benitez will probably be very, very similar to the ones on Rafa.
That could be the best of all time, that.
Steve, we might get a bit of Gerard, you know, Stephen crack. Carragher, no, Jamie.
Oh, tell you what. What about the hospitality at the Kirklands?
It's top. Because obviously it's the only one that somebody's cooked for us, but I think it would have been top anyway.
Yeah.
The first get place, in. We've turned up and there's straight away a buffet lunch available.
Yeah. You could smell the garlic bread as you walked in. It smelled bloody lovely.
Big statement, but I think it could be one of the nicest lads I've met in football, Kirky.
I can't see anybody not getting on with him.
Nah, I can't.
There's nothing
go out
to
for
not,
anybody.
There's nothing to not get on with him about.
If he keeps knocking that lasagnas up as well.
Yeah, I've invited him to his New Year's Eve party.
We're going to get him on for a part two to see what else he's got up the sleeve. You mentioned the spag ball, didn't he? You mentioned the spag ball. Hello, Chris. Where are you again?
He's got a spag ball in his locker. Yeah, no problem, Chris. We'll be round a week of Thursday.
Should we get him in, Kirky, then?
Well, we can't really get him in, can we? Because we're in his kitchen, so...
Well,
you know what I mean? It's not as if we're allowing him to come into his own kitchen, but... I'll just finish this last piece of garlic bread and away we go, eh?
How many garlic breads did you have?
Well, you put two baguettes out, didn't you? And I reckon I've probably done 60%.
Baguette and a half. Looking forward to a mop-up, the one out left. I had a mop-up with a lettuce leaf.
A mop-up. So, yeah, let's get him in, Kirky.
Kirkland, how are we doing?
Afternoon.
Okay. Good afternoon.
What a spread.
Hell of a spread. So we had lasagna, onion rings.
Crispy potatoes. Well, they're meant to be a little bit crispy, I bet.
And a salad.
The crisp came through.
We like looking after people when they come to the house.
It was excellent.
Yeah. Though, see if you can guess which bowl I stayed away from. The onion rings, the potatoes.
There was plenty of salad
the lasagna, to go around. The salad. Yeah, there's some salad left, weren't there?
That was my... speciality as well.
The salad? Yeah. I don't mind a bit of lettuce, but only if it's on my chicken sandwich.
The best greeting we've had thus far.
Oh, comfortably.
Without a shadow.
Yeah, comfortably.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Yeah, top man.
My pleasure, yeah.
We've seen you quite a bit recently with the Kilimanjaro walk.
We have, yeah. Yeah, it's been, I don't know, I'm sure it's the same for you lads, but it's given me a focus as well. You know, give something to look forward to next year. Getting out and about, talking, you know, having a laugh. It's been brilliant. And they go so quick as well when we go on the walks.
It's a social as well, isn't it? It's just getting at them, having a chat with everybody.
It is, it's a good squad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That are getting involved in the walk.
Apart from that one.
Before we get into the career, mate, we've got to talk about, you know, it was all over the papers at the time. And to maybe quash the myth of this bet. Did your dad have a bet that you'd play for England?
Yeah, he did. When you were 13? So it was, it paid out in 2006, I think it was, wasn't it, when I played?
Yeah.
But yeah, he put it on when I was 13. So never played in goal before, apart from that game. So I was an outfielder, never any good. Always on the bench, but you know, just loved playing football. Goalkeeper got injured. I went in goal, played well, made a few saves. And yeah, I never found out until 2 days before that my dad put a bet on. Just got asked it in the press conference before the England game, saying, oh, we've been told that your dad's had a bet. Rang him straight after, said, is this true? He went, yeah, I put it on when you were 13.
So after that, that, after time, that game, never said
they've done well.
No, never said. And I've said to you lads before, like I don't know why he did it for, because I was a chubby lad. If I'd have gone in with him, it would have been a lot more than 100-1. He was 100-1, £100.
Look at me, son. You don't give me 100-1 on him. Look at him.
Trying to get 10 million to 1
playing for England.
Yeah.
100-1.
Just can we just confirm what I'm trying to put this bet on? I'm trying to put that this chunky 13-year-old lad is going to play in the next for England. We'll give you 100-1.
But there's a few of them that did it. So we used to run like a social men's club on a Sunday and a Thursday. I used to do the scoring for the snooker and the darts, so there was a few older chaps that my dad knew that went in as well. So they put £10 in, £20 in and stuff.
So do you know the woman or geezer behind the counter? Would she have had to, or he would have had to make a phone call and do a bit of background check? They couldn't just hand go off the top of the head.
So they ring up, they do background check, see if anyone's been involved in football. My dad was, he played semi-pro, he admits himself, he was never any, you know, never anything special. But I tried to get the same with Lucy. And 25-1 I got for her to play for England or Scotland. So they do the homework, which is rightly or wrongly, but 100-1 it should have been have been a lot more than that.
At least 1,000-1 hour.
Yeah. Well, you said if Leicester are 5,000-1 to win the Premier League, you've got to be thinking.
Well, my mate had a bet on his son. So this is when he was born, though. So as he was born, massive Evertonian, he had a bet on his son to play for Everton and score before he was 21, and he got like 19,000-1.
Jesus.
Did he do it?
He's in the academy at the minute.
Is he?
Yeah, he's in the academy at the minute.
Oh,
yeah.
You've been going out. I've been knocking on, what's the manager called?
Ancelotti.
Yeah, Carlo, any chance, Ayla? My dad said a bet, lad.
15. I think he's 15.
He's a goalkeeper, like, so he's got no chance of scoring.
but he's doing well. He's doing really well. But I think you have to put them bets on when they're more or less born before you know anything like that. I think there was a programme, weren't there? Rory's dad did the same. Rory McIlroy, didn't he? He put a bet on his to win the US Open. And he won it. I think they won a lot of money. There was a few of them that did it in the local pub. So there's a lot of people that have done it. Obviously, there's a lot of people that it's not worked out for, but yeah, thankfully it comes
through. Do you think your dad was more happy about you playing for England? Did he still play for England, or did he have the slip in the crowd?
He pocketed it straight away. He wouldn't have spent it. He'd have put it where he kept the betting slip in his cupboard, like in a little box underneath. So he used to bury his he used to keep a bit of money in there as well, but I always used to know where he used to keep it. So when I was a youngster, I used to go and nick a couple of quid and nick that. But still to this day, I think he's not spent any of it. He's proper old fashioned, my dad. Like, he doesn't spend anything at all.
Just imagine you ringing your dad after the game. Dad, how do you think I did? Oh, I never saw the game, mate. I was down at William Hill.
They played out the day after.
They were counting the day.
So William Hill come to his house the day after.
And made a big.
Gave him the check. Yeah, gave him the check for it. So. Yeah, there was a few of them involved, which was nice because it weren't too far off Christmas, so a lot of them bought presents for the kids and stuff. So
I think it's it was great. Quite good publicity for William Hill, really.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm sure they'd be happy to.
I'm sure they brought a photographer with that check.
There was a bit of a deal, mate. I'm sure.
Who was your manager, by the way?
Steve McLaren. Yeah, Steve McLaren against Greece at Old Trafford. But yeah, coming at half time for Robbo, Paul Robinson. Yeah, coming at half time and. Managed to keep a clean sheet. And then I made my debut for Wigan on the Saturday. So I'd actually played for England before I played the first game for Wigan.
You've been in a few squads before getting on the field.
Yeah, I was in a few, but there was a lot of good keepers around. Yeah. You know, David James was still playing, Paul Robinson, Ben Foster, you know, Robert Green. There was a lot of good keepers. But yeah, it should have happened before it did. But for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. But glad it's only one cap, but glad it's happened.
Yeah.
But I've always said it's not the most important thing for me. And a lot of people say playing for your country is a pinnacle, but for me, the bread and butter was my club football. That was my bread and butter for me. I'm delighted I did it, but it was the biggest honour for me was making my debut for Liverpool. You know, supporting them all my life. First game was when I was 7. Nothing will ever beat that. Not even playing for your country, which some people will say, well, that's, you know, disgraceful or whatever, but for me, because maybe if I'd got a few more caps, it would have been a little bit different. Mm. But it was always about club football for me.
I thought you just jumped on the Liverpool fan bandwagon once you paid for them.
No.
Like Mella does. Mella's a Man City fan.
Well, Man City were and Sheffield Wednesday because his old man played Sheffield Wednesday, didn't he?
But you'll never walk alone now.
No, I'm off. We used to get the bus up, so we used to went up. Yeah, 88 was my first game. So my dad was Leicester fans. They were all Leicester fans. Seeing the red candy kit on TV, I thought, yeah, I like that kit. I'll just go to Liverpool. So we used to get the bus up. It was the longest days, but the best days ever. So we used to set off at like 6 o'clock on the bus from Leicester, all up to Anfield, finish the game, get home at like midnight. But it was the best days. Standing in the cop in them days. And I actually, when I signed for Liverpool, I was scared, really scared, because I've always been a home person. So obviously I was settled down in Leicester. And I thought, I don't know if I can move up to Liverpool. And I think it would have been different if I wouldn't have had Leona, who was my girlfriend then, wife now. But even when I was up there and we were having contract talks, I was thinking, I don't know if I can do this. So I asked Rick Parry at the time, who was the chief exec of Liverpool. He's now the EFL. Mm. And I said, can I go down to the pitch? And he went, yeah, come on. He said, are you okay? I went, I'm just a little bit, because I was only young at the time. Mm. It was,
how old were you?
I was just turned 20. So I was happy at Coventry. We'd just been relegated, but I was number one. Love living near home. I thought, I don't know, Liverpool's a big, you know, big city and stuff.
That's
like
crazy,
that.
Isn't it?
So I went. I said, can I go down to the pitch? He went, yeah, come on. He said, are you nervous? I went, I am. He went, yeah, I can tell. He says, what do you want to do? I went, can I go and sit where I used to stand as a kid? And this is the truth. So I went and sat because there were seats then, obviously. And I went and sat where I used to stand as a kid. And as soon as I sat down, like the hairs on the back of my neck, so I thought, memories came back, you know, as a kid thinking, oh, I'm going to play for Liverpool one day, and then I just said, yeah, let's get it done, let's sign.
It's mad just having that apprehension in the first place, like you said, as a kid, I was. I'm going to play for Liverpool, you're 20 year old, you got the opportunity, and you're getting jittery.
I was, honestly, and if it was any other club, because I turned down clubs before, I was happy at Coventry, but because I've always supported Liverpool, if it was any other club, I wouldn't have gone. And I turned down a few before that, but it was only the pull of Liverpool and supporting them and, you know, the history and that that made me sign for them.
Yeah. Going back to the start then, how old were you when you made your debut for Coventry? I think 18. I remember it.
Tranmere, against Tranmere. John Axberg. He was in the opposite end, yeah.
So he's the first team keeper. First team.
Coach now,
yeah, so he was at Tranmere. Magnus got injured at half time. I come on. And I always remember because my first action, a big ball got, you know, like the old days where it gets booted up into the box and you got all the strikers coming after you. And this ball must have gone about 100 foot and it was about 16 yards out. And I've come and took it basically on the edge of the box and it stuck. And somebody always said to me after, he said, you know, if you'd have dropped that and they'd have scored, your career could have been totally different. And I totally agree with that. And that was my first action in the first team.
I suppose that's it for a goalkeeper, full stop, isn't it? You know, a mistake's a mistake.
Oh, I can define you. Especially a young lad as well. Like, yeah. I was 18, that could have, yeah. But luckily it didn't and managed to get in the first team. And yeah, things happened really quick when I went to Coventry. It all like, you know, from signing in the youth team to making my debut to moving to Liverpool, it all happened really quick.
So even though you got relegated, you must have had a good season yourself.
Yeah, we got relegated at Villa, which was tough. I got player of the season, fans player of the season, players player of the season, but when you get relegated, it's tough to accept that. Yeah, it's tough to accept it. And then obviously the club was in big trouble money-wise. They sold a few players and they've never really recovered from that. But they never forced me out. I remember Gordon Strachan coming, you know, I was in a meeting still for the youth team and he said, look, I knew the bid was coming because Gary Mack was ringing me 6 months before. So he'd come back down to train at Liverpool when his wife wasn't very well. So he'd come back down to train at Coventry, even though he's still at Liverpool. And he's gone back and said to Gerard, look, you need to get this lad.
He said, so Gary McAllister's given you your CV to...
Yeah, Gerard
to all the,
And I played well against Liverpool in the two games. But he was ringing me every couple of weeks saying, look, don't sign for anyone else. We're going to sign you in the next window. And this was like 6 months away, so you think... A lot of things can happen between now and then, but he rang me every couple of weeks saying, look, we're going to sign you, don't sign for anyone else, you're definitely coming to Liverpool. So yeah, I knew about the move 6 months before, which is tapping up, but
got him close to the tapper upper.
Yeah.
How was your those early years at Coventry coming in to the first team? Because I know you've got Strachan, who's got his reputation as I'm sure he likes a shout every now and again and pressure on everyone. And then you've got, Steve Grzybic.
He's a hero, isn't he?
A hero. Oggy was the one. Lucky enough to train with him when I was 15 and then sort of struck up that relationship with him. Seeing the way he trained every day. He was first out, last in. You know, liked a pint, liked a fag. Come in after training, had a pint, had a fag. But he was the hardest working player ever. And I thought, that's what you have to do. That's the only way you can be a footballer. And still speak to him all the time to this day.
Was he as ugly through being a goalkeeper, or were he not a bonny kid?
Well, I'll tell you the one that did it.
I mean, his face, he must have got smashed so many times.
Parky, be careful. I love him.
No,
we could be up for an early finish here. Yeah.
No, because he's not the best looking.
Well, he had his nose. Ian Wright did his nose, didn't he? Remember the game Arsenal away at Highbury? So Oggy's come out, got the ball, and Ian Wright's just gone, kneed him deliberately and broke his nose.
So his looks are through being a goalkeeper.
I think.
I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, Steve.
I don't think he helps, yeah. But I mean, he's a legend. And he only just finished last year, but he was the one that I thought, you know, that's the only way to train. That's the only way. And I always prided myself on that. Like I said, I was lucky. I had Gordon, I had Oggy. I had some young Macker, you know, some young players, some players at a young age, which sort of set the trend for the rest of my career.
Yeah, so I really look up to him.
Yeah, I was really lucky. Yeah.
Was Strachan all right with the young lads? Or was he hard on you?
He could be, but in the right way. So he would never hammer you in front of the old lads, but if he needed a word, he would take you in his office and say, look, you know, pull yourself together and stuff like that. But he just had this knack about getting the best out of players. And he gave me my debut, so, you know, a lot of people...
forever grateful to him.
Oh, you do, yeah, you do.
Big Bambi, he called you, didn't he?
He did. But, well, do you know what this is? I could not kick a ball outside the 18-yard box until I was 17. Honestly, and you don't. Honestly, I could not kick a ball out.
So, at 13, you're chunky.
Yeah.
At 17, you can't kick a football.
Yeah, and that is the truth.
And you played for England.
I swear to you, Parker, that is the truth.
Centre half taking goal kicks.
And I actually come on pitch a couple of times for the youth team as well when I was at Cov. So, because I still love playing outfield, but honestly, I could not kick the ball. I just couldn't. I didn't have the power in my legs. Like you said, I was Bambi, so I had skinny legs. And I just had no power at all, so I could not. But then all of a sudden, it all started to. When I started to train with the first team, it all sort of come together.
I can't imagine you playing out, Kirky. I'll be honest.
Can you not?
What position
I'm
were you?
I'm telling you now, I'd get you 10 goals. I'm being serious. I would get you 10 goals.
Put it in the box.
Yeah,
put it in the box.
All keepers fancy themselves, don't they? Outfielders. But yeah, I'd love to try.
How long before was it Hedman?
So it was Oggy and then one. Magnus come in, yeah. Magnus was number one. So, I mean, at the time, Sweden were unbelievable. They had the best defensive record, you know. But Gordon, yeah, he's seen some in us and he put us instead of Magnus, which was...
He was a specimen as well, Magnus.
He was, yeah. I mean, we used good to...
Good-looking fellow,
was
wasn't he?
You know what, though? He was brilliant because he could have been really... Because I shared a room with him, but he couldn't have been any nicer to us. He said, listen, you've took me place, but I'm always here for you. Anything you need. He said, obviously, I'm not happy about it. I'm going to push you, but he said, there's no problem with his two at all. And he was amazing, really was.
I asked Jimmy Walker that about, is the goalkeepers union a myth?
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, because it's quite painful. You know, sometimes on Twitter, everything's GK union. Yeah. But Jimmy was like, no way.
Oh, no, it's true. Yeah, I've never worked with... Through my career, I've never had a problem with anyone I've worked with. Player-wise as well, to be fair, but keeper-wise, because you are together that long and you train together a lot, you've got to have that special bond. And I've never had an issue with any keeper, really, at all.
But you know, if you're sub and you're winning 4-0, you must be thinking, I hope he throws one in.
Do you know what you do?
I hope he throws one in, and then we're winning 4-0 next week and he throws another one in.
Well, the only way you're going to get in... No, it's not personal, but the only way... And you, like was when you're in goal, you know the only way you're going to lose your place if you lost a form... or you make mistakes. And that's the only way a keeper's going to get in, because it's different to outfielders. Outfielders can play in any, you know, many positions, but goalkeeper needs a lack of form or an injury to the number one to get in.
How did you fit in with that Coventry dressing room then? Because we've got Carlton Palmer,
big characters.
Craig Bellamy.
CP, yeah, he was a character.
Got
he was a character, CP, yeah. He was, but you know what, he was good as gold. He always used to nights out. He always used to tell the lads, you can come and stay in the West Wing if you need a place to stay. And what was his name? CP likes the DP.
Yeah,
but he was. Yeah, we had some Bellas. Yeah, Bellas was. He was a handful when he first come from Norwich. I had to pick him up actually from the Hilton. So he moved up. I had to pick him up in the mornings on the way in. Never said thanks. Like picked him up. Literally got in the car. Wouldn't say anything to me. Like until we got to training. Got out of the car and I was like, oh, okay, Bellas, there you go.
Come on, Craig.
Yeah, but he pissed a few of the lads off quickly at Cov, and he got. I think it was Paul Williams knocked him out in the changing room. Paul Willow said, listen, you've got to be more respectful to, you know, to senior pros. And Bellas, being Bellas, said to me, oh, fuck off, you're gone. And Willow just lamped him, knocked him out, and went over him and said, what are you saying now? And then, to be fair, after that, it calmed him down a bit.
But it did he mean more respectful on the pitch?
Both.
Or off it?
Both. Just he was.
Well, he's not saying thank you for picked up on
the
ball.
He was. He come across as arrogant at times, and a lot of the players didn't like that. And he come in, you know, I think it was 6 million at the time, which was a lot of money, and he thought he was the bee's knees. And he quickly got bought down. Dion was there as well. Dion Dublin, so he got bought down quickly.
Was Bellamy backing it up with his talent?
Not really. No.
So that makes it really. Even more of a bitter pill, doesn't it? If you if you've got a bit of swag, but you're unbelievable.
I think with Bellamy, he always thought he was too good for Cov. Yeah. So where did he go after that? Was it Newcastle he went after?
Yeah,
that?
Newcastle. I think,
Newcastle.
Yeah.
So
he did have some big moves, didn't he?
He did.
Really big moves.
He had some big moves.
Back and just wonder what he's thinking when he's lad on his back and he's been chinned. I think I might just need to calm down now.
Yeah. Well, you do, don't you?
By the way,
I've never been in that situation.
Come here.
When you went to Liverpool, like you said, the apprehension, but you went as Britain's most expensive goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean...
20-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, to this day, honestly, I don't know what the fee was. I don't know what I signed for my wage. And that's the truth. Because I just thought, well... The money will look after itself. you know. And when I eventually decided to sign, like I said, I was umming and ahhing. I just thought, right, just get the deal done. And I never knew. I knew it was a 6-year deal. But apart from that, it was all done for you.
No pressure on that front for you?
No. Do you know what, when I was younger? No. And I always said this, I didn't start feeling the pressure until I was probably 30. But when you're younger, you're not bothered. You just want to play, you want to train.
6-year deal back then, a long old deal, isn't it?
Seven million in my head on the transfer fee.
It was something like that. It was rising on appearance, but obviously I didn't make as many appearances as I should because of injuries. But it was, I'd do it all again just for one game. You know, I've said that many times. All the injuries I had, and I had some bad injuries when I was there. You know, I did my PCL, I knackered my back up, I broke my wrist, I broke my fingers, did all sorts, but I'd do it all again just for one game.
What did you go in as? Did the signing number two?
So Gerald rang me and said, look, we're signing Jersey Dudek, same day. He says, come in, learn from him, work with Joe Corrigan, the goalie coach, work with these players, and he says, when you're ready, I'll put you in. And he was true to his word. It's just that every time I got in, I got a bad injury, more or less straight away. So it knocks the stuffing out of you. And, you know, I was there 5 years, I think I played 60-odd games, but knew in the end when Rafa come in that, well, he basically said he didn't want an English goalkeeper. Said, I'm going to buy a foreigner and you can go.
Were Jerzy Dudek an experienced international then?
Poland. He was unbelievable. Yeah, after about 6 months, I thought, I'm never going to get a game here because he was just incredible. And it wasn't until, remember the Man U game? Against, was it Forlan? Where Carragher headed it back and he went through his legs and went in. He was never the same again. Yeah. Never the same keeper. And that's when I got my chance. But again, I did my PCL. When I got in, it was just injury after injury.
Did you struggle at Coventry with injuries? Or was it just...
No.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? People's luck.
Yeah. It was just at Liverpool.
How were you going into Liverpool changing room?
Fucking hell. Yeah. That's always Stevie, the there.
Michael. Yeah. Massively starstruck.
It helped Gary McAllister with that.
Yeah, LT was there. Sammy Ippi was great. Stevie was good as well, to be fair. But like I said, it helped that I had Leona with me. I think it could have been very different. If I'd have come up to Liverpool on my own as a 19, 20-year-old, I think it could have been very different.
So how did you meet? Because obviously Leona's Scottish, isn't she?
Met in Spain.
Viva España.
Yeah, Magaluf.
No, it was Palmanova.
Do you know what? It was in Alex's bar, wasn't it?
It was, literally, you come out of the hotel and you walk 50 yards and that was Magaluf. But I say to the missus, listen, you don't want to say you went to Magaluf on a girl's holiday. So it's always Palmanova.
He's got a Palmanova postcode.
Yeah, it's Palmanova. So 18, she was 21. Been together ever since. So, lucky.
Redknapp, a good captain.
Jack, he was brilliant.
Yeah. Because I don't see him as a captain character. You know, you see him now. Yeah. I mean,
well, he was one of the first ones that come to us. So him, Nick Barmby, they sort of looked after us. Said, look, whatever you need, where you're going to live, we can show you houses and stuff like that. So he was top draw.
Yeah. Gary McAllister. Yeah. You see as a captain, didn't you know that?
Yeah. Do you mean because he's a bit like obviously a you don't think he's got the aggression to give somebody a fucking light?
Yeah, he comes across a metrosexual, doesn't he? He looks like he looks after himself.
Nice, isn't he?
He's not going to give you a good butt. He is nice, isn't he? That's what it comes down to. He looks nice. He sounds nice.
So you didn't think he was a captain because he was a handsome bastard?
Yeah, basically.
There's different roles of a captain. Yeah. Same as Kirky's just said then. Just saying I can show you the houses and stuff like that.
That's like family, isn't
it? Stuff you do off the pitch as well. Yeah, when you look after the players.
That's what makes a captain, not just your... I'm giving you a fucking roll your sleeves up on the pitch. Was that your own personal question, the Redknapp captain one, or one off Twitter?
No, it's my own personal question.
Right. Soft spot for Jane.
Yeah.
It comes up quite. David Norris is still your favourite, isn't he?
Yeah.
Otsema Bor. He's a big fan of Otsema Bor.
Yeah. Oh, a story about him, by the way. So when he was at Liverpool, he lived in Toxteth, Semi did. So he come in one morning on the Sunday in the treatment room and he was limping. So he was coming limping and the physio went, what's happened, John? He went, I got shot last night. He was in a bar in Liverpool and got shot in his arse. And you could see the bullet, it was straight through his arse. He had a big hole in his bum.
We've obviously had him on. Yeah. But what did you, as players, did you think he was a bit of a wrong one? A bit of a scally?
I think he put himself in situations what he shouldn't have done.
Yeah, he said that, didn't he?
Yeah, he was always out. He was, I think his car got petrol bombed as well. Outside his house, but he put himself in situations you shouldn't have done.
Yeah. But he's a lovely lad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mad, big boy as well. He loved his, loved doing
he's
his
even
wipes.
Bigger now.
Is he?
Yeah. Animal, you took a liking to him, didn't you?
Oh, well, yeah, we're breaking down.
He's a good player, you know. He's a good player. The right back, he's quick and everything, yeah, but he just, I think he knew a few people that didn't help him, sort of thing, where he was from and speak.
Yeah. Were you injured for the Champions League final?
Yes. Yeah, so I had my back operation. So I played in the early games, played against Olympiacos, and then I did my back in, so I was out for 7 months with that.
Is that right? Carson offered his medal.
Yeah, on the pitch after. Yeah, but it was brilliant off him. But when you don't, what you could play in every game leading up to a final, but when you don't play in that final, you don't think you deserve it, even though you played in every game before. So
Carson played a minute.
I think he played a couple of games. I think he played against Roma as well.
Right.
Yeah, I think he played a couple of games, but no, just told him, no, listen, you deserve it. You're involved on the day, but that's just Scotty, that one. You know, we played together when we were under 16s for England. So
yeah.
He was. No,
I think he knew you as well. He knew, didn't he? He knew you'd turn
it around.
That's
right. Yeah,
he'll not
take
it.
Lads will think I'm fantastic.
Should have just got that, shouldn't I?
I don't know about that. If I've played in every game apart from the final, I think I'm still grateful.
Still think I'm having one. I deserve one.
Yeah.
Well, you do deserve one, don't you?
Well, I was meant 100%. To get one, but Rafa had like about 30 staff on his books, and he took a few medals that were meant for the lads and gave them to his staff.
What?
Yeah, that weren't really meant to.
Come on, Rafa.
Yeah, he did, honestly.
Rafa.
Yeah, so never got one.
So were you happy to leave then in the end?
I had to leave.
Was it getting you?
Well, he just said that I'm not going to play. He wants a foreign goalkeeper, sign Pepe, which you can't argue with that.
What would you think his reasoning was behind wanting a foreign goalkeeper?
I think just because he's been brought up in Spain and played with them keepers, and I think he managed Reina before, and he just said, I'm going to bring Pepe Reina in, and you're going to have to go.
I want to fetch Pepe Reina in, fair enough, but just to generalise it to I want a foreign goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's what he said, yeah.
It's a bit like...
It is, yeah.
So I knew I had to go. Once the manager says that to you, you got no chance.
Yeah.
So yeah, left, went to West Brom. Joe Corrigan went there with Brian Robson, who's the goalie coach, went there. Started off well, played the first 10 games, got my form back, and then we played at Bolton against Kevin Davis. And I've come and took a cross, and he's hit me in the side. And I thought, shit, there's something wrong there. And I carried on, got to half time, went toilet, pissed blood, carried on for the second half, stupidly. I shouldn't have done it, I could hardly move. And then got home that night and collapsed. And Leona had to call the ambulance and basically lacerated my kidney. He'd split my kidney open.
Oh, my word.
So I was out for months with that. And that sort of put an end to my West Brom career. She was panicking like mad. She just heard a big thud in the bathroom, and there was all blood on the floor, and she got me to hospital. So it was but that was
so
not
innocuous.
Nice one.
Not Kevin Davis, just a.
Oh no, he's yeah.
He's he knows
he was never going to win it.
Yeah,
yeah. He was well. He did that as well. He did that thing as well. So he's done a couple of them. Yeah. He was never going to win it, and he's done his big time. Yeah,
he's left one on you.
Oh yeah, right his knee right into me. Kidney, and Paul Jewell rang us at Wigan, come and play for me. And because it was just down the road, 15 minutes, I thought, yeah, do that. And that's where my career really kicked off then. 2006 to 2010, that's the best I played.
And what age are you now then? 23?
So when did I go there? 26.
26?
Yeah, 26. So, and then when Paul left, Brucey come in, obviously, and he was just probably the best I've played under, Steve Bruce.
Yeah?
Yeah. Man management, he was incredible. Just knew how to get the best out of players, picked up bargain. He bought Valencia for $400,000,
yeah.
Palacios for $200,000. He just knew how to pick players.
Do you ever look back and think, fucking hell, I mean, I were at my boyhood club, my team that I supported, and I had all them injuries, and then I go and play 140-odd games on the bounce. Do you ever think, fucking hell?
Yeah.
Like, how unlucky is that?
Yeah, that's the tough thing about Liverpool. It just didn't work out. You know, I played, say, 50, 60 games, but it should have been a lot more. And it should have been for England, really, as well. But the injury's just, not the stuffing out of me. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work out. But after that, you know, the last 10 years of my career were, pretty good.
Mm.
Mm.
Did you, I don't want to take it down a level, but were you playing that game 9-1 against Tottenham?
Yes, I was, thanks for that, yeah. Yes, I was, yeah. It was 1-0 at half-time.
Was it?
Yeah.
Nine goals in one half? That's even worse.
Eight goals in one half.
Oh, sorry, 8 goals.
1-0 it all.
All right. Yeah. I thought you were winning 1-0.
Yes, I played in that one, yeah. That was...
Were any your fault?
Two.
Two?
The last two.
Only 25%.
The last two, yeah. The last two were my fault, but yeah, that was tough after that. That was a long week's training after that.
I bet it was.
I don't want to bring it down enough.
Yeah, that was that was one of the worst moments of my career, yeah. Without a shadow of a doubt.
Sorry,
yeah.
Mate.
No, no.
The thing is, though, if only two were your fault, really, I don't think I'd have got that pissed about it.
And it was 1-0 at half time, and you know, first half, I must have had 10-12 saves. So I was thinking, this is going to be the same second half. So I was thinking, fucking hell, they could score a few goals here, because we were just not at it at all. And they had Crouchy, Defoe, Cranshire, they had a lot of players. And I thought, if I don't save a few second half, but they scored about three in the first 5 minutes second half, and I thought, oh God, this could be long here. And then the clock just went backwards. Do you know when you're playing them games?
Tell you as well.
Yeah, it was on. Oh yeah, it was on Sunday. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was on Sunday. All right.
Yeah, you know when you look at the clock and it's just not moving.
Stuck. Thinking,
come on. And then do you know what pissed me off the most? The ref added. It was like 7-1. And he added like 6 minutes on injury time.
Just come on.
And they scored another 2 minutes, two goals in injury time. I said, do you really have to do that?
Because 6-1 can happen, can't it? It's not as outrageous.
Yeah, can you not just play the whistle? Like... Why add 6 minutes on? Yeah. He said, well, I've got to stick by the rules. I was thinking, no, you don't have to do that.
Nobody's going to pull you up, mate, if you knock a couple of minutes injury time.
If you'd have come off that like 6-7-1, you know, it's still tough, but yeah, 9-1 just sounds horrendous.
I don't want to bring it down a notch. Oh. Were you in goal for the 9-1?
What a twat. I knew it was coming. God.
Who did Martinez bring in then?
When he was... Alabsi.
Yeah.
Ali Alabsi, yeah. From, what is he from?
Oman.
Oman, yeah.
So I wonder what it is with these foreign coaches just thinking, I want a foreign keeper.
Well, when I first went to Liverpool, Rafa took me for a session. And he said, right, just stand there. He said, put your hands like that. And he said, I'm going to throw the ball to you and I just want you to jab it back to me. Right? So I did that. I was thinking, what am I doing here? And then he put some crossing. I've come and took the first one clean, about 10 foot in the air. He went, no. He said, I don't want you to catch another ball. He said, I want you to punch everything that comes your way now. So he told me not to catch balls in training or in games and stuff like that. So I knew it was... He was going,
what's the keeper coach do in that situation? Because
that was the thing. He never he won't come out training until like the last half hour. So he was never out on the pitch. It was you always with a team. It was always shape. It was always, you know, the sessions under Rafa were tough. I think every player says the same. He was just football obsessed. He was not bothered about players' personal lives or anything like that. He was just
ruthless.
Oh, ruthless. Yeah.
When you very hands on.
When you said tough, do you mean physically tough, or do you mean you're tough as in
mentally
like,
tough?
You're doing a lot of shape and it's boring.
You'd
and
have no ball. You'd do shape for like an hour and a half with no ball. So he'd call different coloured discs out. You'd all have to shift over, and it was all that sort of stuff. It was tough, really tough.
Must have been fucking boring.
Oh, it was. Yeah, but he got results. To be fair to him, so you couldn't really. But a lot of players that played under Rafa would tell you the same, that didn't have a lot of time for him.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I heard that.
Yeah, didn't have a lot of time for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, purely focused on football. I'll tell you another one as well, Martinez, when was at Wigan. So he said so we're all sitting, first meeting he had when he come in, he said, how many of you got kids? And I had a kid, there was a few lads that had kids. He went, shouldn't really have kids until you finish your career or you come into the end of your career. So it's because they can put you off your career sort of thing. That was the first thing he said.
I'll chip around to your house, you can look after her for next fucking 3 years of my contract.
Yeah. So that was the first thing he said when he came in.
Shouldn't have kids.
Until you come into the latter end of your career, or when you finish your career.
If that gets out in the press, he's getting slaughtered for that.
Yeah, that was his first meeting. Yeah.
Were you all right after that then?
Well, when he came, we were 17th in the league. And he said that you're not a bottom three team. He says, I see you as a Champions League team. So again, that was one of his first meetings. So he's told us not to have kids, and he's told us we should be in the Champions League. So the lads were like, come out of that meeting, the lads are like, what is going on?
Lads put the kids up for adoption, so they made Champions League.
Actually really annoyed me when he said that.
Yeah.
Because we had Lucy in that, yeah. A few of those lads, didn't go well at all.
I don't know why you'd even say that. Even if you thought it, you just don't, do you?
No.
Because the chances are there's a lot of people going to have kids in the room.
Well, there was, yeah.
Then what are you meant to do? Yeah. Like you say, take them back.
Sorry. I'm really sorry. I've got a 4-year-old, I'm sorry.
Then the Champions League shot after that. Because we'd always battled relegation and we knew we weren't the best players, but we had a good team spirit. But when he come out of that one, we're like, God,
Jesus. You've got a fucking whopper here, lads.
I know you've got to be positive, but Champions League.
We've got a whopper here.
Brucey was he was amazing. He as man management goes, he's the best I've worked
with. What did you have personal experience of the man to man management?
Like, with Brucey,
good for you, yeah.
Oh yeah, he used to come up to you and say, "How's things at home?" He knew who your wife was, knew your kids' names.
Yeah, that makes. I imagine that makes.
Knew all that. How's the owner doing? How's Lucy doing at school? Yeah, all that sort.
So
of
complete
stuff.
Opposite then. How's your kids? Not send them back.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, complete opposite.
Could you get rid of them or?
Yeah. You're not playing this week because your missus is pregnant. Yeah. All right, no bother.
No, he was completely different, Bruce.
I've had an afternoon drinking with him, and he's just a nice bloke.
Yeah,
do you know
Brucey.
What I mean? Yeah. Like, he just got sacked from Sunderland actually, and he went to put his money in the kitty, you know, for his round, and he put a 50 in. Put a Redding in. I said, "Fucking hell." Just been paid up, have you? Just like there's a nod and a smile.
He used to join in the boxes, didn't he? So we used to do boxes at Wigan. So he used to join in. And any time he'd give the ball away, he'd be like, "Oh, you're in." He says, "How many games have you played for Man U?" He said, "Get in." It's like 600 games for Man U. Yeah, so he had the banter with it as well.
Who was at Chef Wed then, manager-wise?
So it was Dave Jones. So
he signed you?
Yeah, he signed me, yeah. Dave Jones. Stuart Gray was number two. And then Dave left and Stuart took over. But yeah, great club. Yeah, really good club. Fan base.
Massive, innit?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's obviously then when I started travelling there, that's when the problems off the pitch sort of started to happen. You know, being away from home and travelling and stuff like that. So it was a tough 3 years there. But if it wasn't for being such a good club and the staff, then I'd have walked long before.
Did you have, you know, obviously we'll get into the problems that you had, but did you used to have problems when you were travelling to away games when you were still living at home? You know, for that, the Friday, you should leave Friday morning night and get back Saturday.
Yeah, I never
night.
Wanted to do it. Yeah, never felt comfy doing it. I mean, even when at Wigan sometimes we had home games and he'd make us stay in a hotel at the Writington. I was thinking, oh, I just want to be at home, you know. But yeah, I never, even when I was younger, like when I used to go away to England, for like 10, 12 days, I hated it. Just hated being away from home. And then obviously, you know, you met Leona, you have kids, and then being away again. I know a lot of players like it sometimes. It gives them a breather, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I was never one for that, being away from home. And then obviously the Sheffield routine just completely flipped. You know, for 11 years, Liverpool, Wigan, you know, I was dropping Lucy off at school, picking her up, you know, going for lunch with the missus, getting back from training, then all of a sudden I'm setting off at like 5 a.m, getting beat in the traffic in Manchester, getting to training, no one's there, you know, getting back late and then doing it all again. It was just couldn't get my head around it.
Complete change to your life.
Complete change. Yeah, flipped it on its head. But as like I said, I mean, Rhodesy was brilliant. He knew there was some sort of issue, but didn't really know how deep it was going. So he gave me extra days off, you know, warm downs. He said, "Look, just stay home, do it yourself." So the club were amazing with us.
Were you open from the off?
No. Said it was Leona that suffered with depression. Because back then, in, you know, 2012, it was never spoke of.
Mm.
You know, I thought, well, I can't come out and say it's myself. I've just signed for the club. If I come out and say I'm struggling, they're going to, you know, what they're going to do. So we said it was Leona.
Were you open with Leona?
Yeah. Not. I mean, she knew I was anxious and struggling being away from home and the travelling and stuff. But she didn't really know how bad it was until 2016. Yeah, but I mean, we got advised to say it was Leona and not me by people.
Yeah, that's wrong in itself.
Yeah, we shouldn't have done it. Should have come out, and because seeing the way they were when they found out, they were amazing. But like I said, back in 2012, what's that? Nearly 8 years ago. You just did say it, did you? Mm. You just did. Nobody knew about it.
As daft as it sounds, mate. Did you used to not like being an older then?
If I was with the girls, yeah. So if I was with them, yeah, fine. But I always like to get home.
Yeah.
But no, as long as I was with Leona or Lucy, yeah, I was fine.
Right.
Yeah. Pre-seasons, didn't really like them.
And what did you, how did it make you feel? Like, I'm just trying to...
Just thinking constantly about getting home.
Like, just not socialising with anyone, just not really wanting to.
Yeah, but then I'd be thinking, oh, what are the girls doing at home? You know, or what would I be doing if I was at home? So yeah, it was just constant on my mind all the time, yeah.
Because I saw you tweeted something, and it was a write-up, and the picture was on there of you, and you said, this is when I was at one of my darkest, one of my worst times. And I think, was it Chef Wed?
I think it was, yeah, and the picture.
Yeah, that was it.
You can sort of tell, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. You just didn't. There's nothing behind your eyes. Yeah,
you sort of like you just go through the motions, and but it was gradually for 3 years, and then I was going to sign again for him in 2015, and I was in my training kit, and I just thought, nah, I need to get back home now. I need to get closer to home, and that's when I signed for Preston. Yeah, but I thought getting closer to home would sort of reverse the cycle, but it didn't.
Why is that then, do you think?
I think because I was too far. I was too far into it and just didn't know. Just withdraw myself, didn't answer my phone, you know, locked the gates, didn't want to do anything, didn't socialise at all. And I thought, you know, that was sort of normal for me then. And I just couldn't get out of it.
So when you got back home, so you went to training at Sheffield Wednesday and you got back home, were you just normal when you got home?
I was constantly thinking what time I've got to set off the next morning.
Right. Yeah. So you couldn't even enjoy your time at home you'd been thinking so much about throughout the day, really?
Yeah, just thinking what time I've got to get up, you know, set my clothes out, set all my stuff out, had my car ready to go, faced it, you know, down the drive so I could get out in the morning, out the door, drive straight away. So it was just constantly, my mind was just in a mess all the time.
But you're setting yourself within the cycle then, aren't you? Because the byproduct of your unhappiness is thinking about it all the time and coming home is what you're missing.
Yeah.
And then you're then not enjoying that time because you're
thinking about going back the day after.
The thing that's making you unhappy is taking up all that thought process.
It was just a vicious cycle, until I just thought, you know, I need to get this sorted out.
Did you ever think, like, early doors, like 6 months into Sheffield Wednesday, it's not for me, I'm the transfer request.
Oh, yeah, I did, after 2 weeks.
Did
two
you?
Weeks. 2 weeks, yeah.
Jesus.
So I rang him after 2 weeks and said, look, I can't, you know, again, blame Leona. Not blame her, but we sort of use Leona and said, look, she's really suffering, I need to be at home. Can you rip my contract up? And the club said, look, just take your time, you know, we'll do whatever you need for you and your wife. But just think about it. So they went away pre-season, said, look, you don't have to come away with us, stay at home and then come and see us after. So the club handled it brilliantly. They really did. And then that's when I went back and said, look, you can have days off here, days off there. We'll do whatever you need. Does your missus need counselling? All this sort of stuff. So they were top draw. And I think that's what made me stay.
Yeah.
Because of how good they were.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But inevitably, that was just a byproduct of it continuing. It convinced you to stay.
Yeah, for 3 years.
You never just think, we'll move over.
No, because Lucy was at school, she was happy. You know, we lived up here since 2001. And you don't know how long you're going to be at a club, do you? I mean, signed a year with a year's extension. So I thought, you know, if you sign 4 or 5 years, then you probably move. But yeah, we're never going to move. Mm. Never going to move. Yeah, eventually moved back to Preston. Number two to Jordan. Knew I was going to be number two, which fitted well because I didn't have the pressure of having to play.
Jordan.
Pickford.
Oh, what?
Yeah. Was it, yeah,
he went on loan, didn't he?
Yeah, he went on loan from Sunderland, yeah.
Oh, I never knew that.
Oh, he's unbelievable, yeah. Yeah, he was incredible. But it suited me because I didn't have to play.
Had your head completely gone at this point?
Yeah, couldn't focus. Didn't want to train, didn't want to do anything, yeah. Yeah, sort of stuck at it for the year. And then that's when I thought, I need to retire now. I need to sort it out. And that's when I contacted the PFA. And things started to get better. Mm-hmm. As soon as I asked for help, it was big weight off my shoulders. And for Leona as well. Because obviously, you know, it's tough for you, but it's tough for people that live with you as well.
Yeah.
And seeing you become a different person to what they know.
Did you self-diagnose yourself?
No, it wasn't until I seen a counsellor. And that's when it all started to fall into place then. And she explained things. She gave me, you know, coping mechanisms to cope with stuff, and things got a lot better pretty quickly, really.
You think it's that branding, isn't it? Depression. Yeah. It's when you stick the label on it.
Yeah.
I suppose before that, then you just, I'm feeling a bit shit. Oh, I want to get along. I want it. And I suppose you don't want to self-diagnose.
No.
That word.
No, it's the last thing you want to do.
But then it's the best thing that you need to hear.
It makes sense why you've been feeling that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we all get in a bad mood, don't we? We all feel like, I don't really want to speak to anybody, I don't want to see anybody. But then it keeps on going and it gets worse.
I got help off the PFA in 2016. Things got good for about a year and a half, but then I started missing football, started missing the dressing room, started missing a routine. You know, it's like you know your routine when you're in football. You know what you're going to do, where you're going to be. So I started slipping back. When was it? Last January. So a year gone, and I thought, I just felt myself slipping back again, not answering the phone, not wanting to do anything, not doing any fitness work. And I thought, you know, I don't want to go back to the way I was. So we rang the PFA and said, look, I'm struggling again. I need to go in somewhere this time. I want to go into a rehab place for mental health. So I rang the PFA and they said, look, we can get you in, but it's going to be 3 months. You know, there's a waiting list. And I thought, I can't wait that long. So me and Leona just got on the internet, searched for places close to here because I didn't want to be miles away.
Yeah, that's what I was about to ask that. I mean, they'd probably sent you to the Spotting Chance, would they?
Yeah, which was miles away, straight away.
Yeah.
They take the phones off you as well. So the first 5 days, you have no contact with the outside world. Which I thought, that's just not real, because then I won't come home and not speak to my missus for 5 days. So we just searched places around here and found Parkland Place in North Wales, which is an hour from here. And I was in there the next day, rang them up, said, look, I need help. Can you get me in? And they said, yeah, come here. And it was the best thing I've ever done. It was just, you know, it was tough because the group sessions in the morning, you're with people that have got like addictions and, you know, that have been through horrendous times during their life. You know, all sorts of stuff, the worst stuff you can imagine, and you're listening to their stories, but it all leads back to the mental health then, which caused mental health for them. So after 2 days, I rang Leona and said, I'm not sure I can carry on these group sessions. And she said, look, just stick at it and you'll benefit from it in the end. And then after about 4 days, I couldn't wait to get down there in the morning, because you sort of talk and you help each other and you listen to people's stories, and then you'd have the one-on-ones in the afternoon. And it was amazing. And I thought, because I said, right, I have trouble staying away from home. I said, can I travel in every day? And they said, look, we'll do whatever you want to do, which makes you feel more comfortable. So in my head, straight away, I'm thinking, well, I'm going to travel in every day and go back there in the morning. But after about 3 days, because I was that comfortable, I started staying over, which was huge for me.
Yeah, huge for me.
I stayed over more then than I come home. Which helped, because at nights we'd all sit outside and it was a beautiful place where it was, right on the beach. We just all chatted at night and it was the best thing I've ever done. And then sitting here now, I feel brilliant. And I know all the stuff I need to do. You know, now when I start feeling a little bit, you know, sweaty palms and start feeling a bit anxious. So, yeah, I wish I had done that back in 2016.
Is it hard for you to speak about the stuff you've just spoke about?
No, not hard, no. It makes you realise, sometimes think, wow, did I actually get that bad? You know, you think, yeah, I was actually that bad.
Did you ever think, you know, you said in these sessions, some people have had some, like, really bad experiences. Oof. Did you ever think to yourself, like, how can I be like this? They've had their experiences, and now we're a fucking professional footballer for Liverpool and all these. Why shouldn't I be like this?
I said that to them, I said, I can't relate to some of the stuff they're saying to me. Because it just didn't. She went, well, just keep listening to it. You know, you might pick up on bits and bobs. But yeah, then there was a little bit of guilt then as well. Because there was people in there that have lost all the money. They've got kids. They can't feed the kids. You know, and, you know, whether it's through loss of jobs because of mental health or addictions and stuff like that. So the first 2 days were, I was thinking, I shouldn't be in this room with these people because I don't deserve to be in the room, you know, with these people. But after that, and then, you know, it was the best thing I could have ever done.
Because that wouldn't happen now. When you said you were advised to say that it was Leona that was struggling, there's no way that can happen now.
Oh, imagine that now. If that got out.
No.
It would, yeah.
They'll be uproar, won't they?
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's common knowledge now, and I think the cure, if so to speak, is to talk about it.
Talking and exercise. So we're doing that walking now. It is literally the best two things you can do.
It does help.
talking them, yeah, and exercise.
Even if you're
huge.
Just talking about shit, not even talking about your situation.
Yeah.
But I think it's just hard. In the past, it's hard for men to speak.
Yeah.
Like, men, it's hard for men to get deep with each other, innit?
Mm.
I find, anyway. I'm not the biggest talker. I don't really talk about how I feel on stuff, but I think that's the whole thing now of trying to get people to tell you how you're feeling. Yeah.
Because I think at the time you think, well, no one else is going to feel like I feel, or no one else is going to go through. But people do.
Yeah. It's one of them where you never know what's happening. You don't know people's doors. Nah.
No, that's what, because people don't talk about it. We don't know.
Yeah.
And the fact is that it does happen to a lot of people. And the fact that you're talking about it more.
Mm. Well, when the PFA
makes it more acceptable.
When I contacted the PFA and said, "Look," they then contacted me and said, "Look, we've got a lot of players that are really struggling." That nobody knew about, and they said, would you come out and talk about it? You know, would you come out and talk to the BBC? We're not sure how it's going to go. We're not sure how it's going to be taken, but you know, would you do that? And I thought, yeah, you know, I'll do that. And the response was just incredible.
So, do you know when you signed for Bury, where's that in the timeline? Did you just left Preston?
Yeah.
And were you think, did you, because if I remember right, did you not really want to sign? Did you not really want to come to Bury?
No. So I got offered a new deal at, first of all, I was going back to Wigan in 2015 under Gary Caldwell. So I thought, getting back to Wigan, where I loved it, I thought, that's going to help.
Yeah.
So he said, come on, come here. Sorted the deal out the night before. Went in, said, right, we need you to go on a medical. You know, we just need to check things. So my fitness record at Sheffield Wednesday, so they sent all the medical records through, 97 point, smudge centimore through, 97% training, games. I never missed anything. So they failed me on a medical. Because I found out they wanted to sign someone else. But I had like three other clubs lined up, Burnley were one of them. And I said, look, I can sign for these clubs, you're definitely going to sign me. And Gaz went, yeah, we just need to do all the paperwork and you know, the Jonathan Jackson, yeah, not a problem. Made me wait for 2 days in the canteen. And I thought, this is not going to happen, this. And then Gaz come down, I played with Gaz at Wigan. And I was feeling bad anyway, and I just thought, they're pissing me around here. You know, they're messing me around. And Gaz come down from his office and said, I'm just going out to training now. Will you wait here for an hour for me? Will you wait in the canteen for another hour? And I said, okay, I will. And then he literally come back in, took me to his office and said, yeah, we're not signing you. Okay. And that knocked me for six. I just left. I said, why? Well, you can't stay fit. And I went, how are you saying that? You know, the records are there. Since I left Wigan, my fitness record was great. So then I went to Preston, got offered a new deal at Preston, went in to sign it after the last game of the season and got told that I was too old and they wanted to sign a younger keeper. So again, these things, it was just like bang, bang.
And no one knew about your circumstance at this stage?
No. Which this, we all know football's ruthless.
But. Yeah. But I mean, if you played with him and he's your pal and he's still done that, what chance you got?
Yeah.
You know?
And then I went to Bury. But I think it was... I knew I shouldn't have done, but it's always that fight kicks in, doesn't it? Thinking, oh, I can get through this.
Yeah.
You know, you played football, you know, give it another year. And as soon as I went there, I just didn't want to train, didn't want to. And we were going away pre-season to Portugal. And the thought of it was just, I was a wreck. Thinking, oh, I can't leave, I don't want to go, pre-season. I ended up getting on the plane, ended up going out there, and ended up coming home after 2 days because I just thought, no. I don't want to do it. I was on the top of a roof. I was going to jump off. And then Leona Lucy come straight into my head and thought, you know, I always say it was like a seesaw. You know, it was going to go one way or the other. I was either going to jump off or I was going to fight back. And I rang Leona straight away. She said, look, you've got to get home. Get home. She booked a flight for me the next day. Told Dave that there was an issue with Leona again.
Dave Flickroft.
Yeah. By this time. But then when he come back, I told him that I was struggling personally. And he'd been through it himself when his dad committed suicide. And he'd been through it and he said, look, what do you need? We'll help you. And I just said, look, I just need to finish football. I need to get proper help. And, you know, they terminated my contract and that was it.
But you still kicked, because I didn't go to Portugal, but I think we were there with each other a few days.
So I come back. Again, it was that. He said, we'll have a couple of weeks off and then see how you feel. So again, it was that professional pride thing. Well, come on, you know, you can do it now. They've been away pre-season. You're just going to be training. Go back in, and got to about the fifth day. And there was a game. We were playing in a practice game and there were shots just flying in. I weren't even diving. And I just thought, I just walked off the pitch. And I just said, look, I'll give it a go. I need to go now. And Dave was amazing with us. You know, he gave us a big hug. He said, look, I'm here for you. You know, I've been through similar, whatever you need, the club's here for you. And they were amazing. And I just said, look, I just need you to rip my contract up. And they did it there and then. And that's when I rang the PFA then.
So was Leona, was she having kittens knowing that you were going away with Bury?
Yeah.
So that's...
She knew, about she said, you. She knew that I would not last the week out there.
Yeah, having kittens is a... Yeah. I don't know if it's a panicking terminology or yeah. what, but having like really yeah. panicking about what's
I
going
on. I know what I meant.
Yeah, having yeah. kittens. Yeah. Just to, clear up.
Yeah, she knew. She knew I weren't going to last.
So but, she's just sat at home waiting to put you up.
But she door. Also knew that I had to go out there for it all to sort of come to a head.
Yeah.
Yeah, for it all to... Yeah. She knew I needed to do that, yeah. Yeah.
Did you tell her the situation when you said you were stood on that roof? Did
yeah. I rang her when I was on the roof.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said, right, take a step backwards and get off the roof. And went inside and broke down. And she said, look, you need to come home now. We need to sort this out. And literally flew home the next morning. Yeah. So she was amazing. Yeah. And we told Lucy, we were honest with Lucy because she noticed I weren't the same as a dad. You know, I was there for her, but I wasn't there for her. So we just sat down and said, look, you know, when dad's been injured in the past and he's done his knee or his ankle and he's gone and got treatment off a physio, we just said, look, dad's head's not great at the minute and he needs to get help for it. And, you know, I said, look, I'm going to have to go away for a while. And she went, dad, you've got to do what you got, you know, you've got to do it because we want you back. You know, we want you back to your old self. So when she said that, that just, spurred me on even more than to get help. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Going back to the Bury thing, mate, because it was only a couple of days, and I remember, I think it was just me and you in the treatment room, and you're getting acupuncture, and I could just tell that something wasn't right, because we didn't really know. I think Flitcroft kind of touched on it a little bit, or he might have even said it was your missus. I don't know how honest he was with us all. You know, from a player's point of view, I look back and I think I should have tried to speak to you about it.
Yeah, but you didn't know that, did you? And it just wasn't talked about then, was it? You know, because sometimes you think, oh, I don't want to pry because it's people's personal
business.
And you don't I think that was it. I was kind of like,
a lot of people have said like that. I should. You know, a lot of people have said that. But a lot of people didn't have a clue. You know, I mean, my best mate I've known since I was 14, 15, he had no idea whatsoever. And he kicks himself to this day that he never knew. And we go on holiday every year together with the families. And he said he had no idea. Because you put on a front, you know, when you're out there, you put on a front. But then when you come home, that's when you shut yourself off. So yeah, a lot of people have said that.
Luckily, at Bury, you had a body double.
I was a Chris Kirkland body shot, a photo shot
for the
team photo. Yeah. That's my claim to fame. That.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the team photo.
What was that goalkeeper kit on there, Brownie?
Imagine.
You have the gloves on as well.
Yeah, put everything on. Shin pads.
Brilliant.
Said, you said, I've been a lot of things in my time, but I've never been a Chris Kirkland photo shot.
Yeah, time flies, doesn't it? I mean, it just, you know, you look back now, and that was, what was that, 4 years ago?
I mean, to be fair, Kirky, right? Not even close. You're the most sensible goalkeeper I think I've ever. Yeah. Like, if somebody said to me, what position do you think you would be? Goalkeeper would probably be one of the last. Because most of them are fucking nutters, aren't they?
Well, again, I've got that off Oggy. Oggy was the same. He was, you know, he was down to earth. He treated players with respect. He got respect back off players. I mean, I've worked with some keepers that are nuts. Don't get me wrong.
Because were you with Bywater?
Stevie, yeah, with
and
him.
We've heard. Oh,
brilliant!
Tables.
Oh, it's all true. Oh, it's all true. So, what was it? Under 18s once. He could not sit still. So he could not stay in his room. He had to be doing something. So he took the coach. I can't remember what coach it was for the under 18s. Basically, nicked his car keys. Drove his car about 5 miles away, ran back to the hotel, threw him his keys and went, I've just parked your car 5 miles away. He said, you go and get it.
Didn't even tell him where it were?
Oh yeah, he told him where it was. Oh. He said, it's like, by this pub, like, it's literally 5 miles away. And then just
no reason though. Yeah. Just...
Alan Shearer was the one though. So we trained with England before Euro 2000 with Kevin Keegan. Me and Stevie got invited down. Stevie G, Gareth Barry. We got invited to train with them before Euro 2000. So we were staying in the hotel. And Stevie, Shearer did submit to Stevie, and Stevie, without Stevie just taking it and thinking, okay, that's the captain.
That's Alan Shearer.
Yeah, he unscrewed the, you know, in the hotel door, the keyhole, the peephole.
Oh, yeah.
Unscrewed that and put a fire extinguisher through it and emptied the fire extinguisher into Shearer's room.
As a young lad,
just invited to train in the squad.
Not even in the squad.
And then just emptied it out. into Shearer's room. And obviously, Shearer got his payback. Like.
Goodness.
Yeah, but that was just Stevie. Armless, but brilliant.
Was he that cocky? Like, cocky's the right word. Yeah, I would say that's cocky.
I think with Stevie, he was because when Kevin Keegan used to join in training, and like he'd be doing the shooting, like we talked about Dino, and Kevin Keegan would be three on goal, and he'd be like, go on, Kev, try and beat me, Kev. Honestly. Yeah, go on, Keegan, go on. Like that. And all the lads were like, is this lad real? Like, proper giving it to Kevin Keegan. But he's, do you know, I think he does it in a way, he doesn't mean any harm when he does it.
Yeah.
He's just retired now, actually, isn't he? He's just recently retired. But yeah, he wasn't shy. He wasn't a shy lad, but great lad, though, as well. And he was at Sheffield Wednesday when I went. So he was there with Weaves. Them two were already there, and I signed as well.
That's funny.
But go on, he's a... honestly, go on, Kev.
It's tickled as that. Oh.
Dear me. So what were he like as a... Well, we'll have to speak about Gerrard, don't we? We've got to speak about it. They've just won the league.
Well, Stevie was the best I've ever played with and played against. I always say it was him and Ronaldo. But yeah, playing with him, the standards he set in training was just, yeah. Everything you've seen, he hated losing games. Him and Carra, if you were on their you didn't want to be on their team in training, because if you lost, they wouldn't talk to you. Like they would not talk to you for like a day or two. And then they'd say, I'm not on your team again. You know, I don't want him again. But they were that competitive in training, but he was incredible. He just, when he passed the ball, when he hit it was just a different sound. To everyone else, he was just so crisp, and he could put it wherever he wanted to put it. But this was the way he played in games was the way he trained every single day. Never like slacked off or never thought, oh, I don't really want to train here. He was the same every single day. Same as Carra, and that's why they both played for them for how many years?
We had someone on Twitter mention the was there a bit of a kerfuffle with Warnock? Was it after the Leeds incident?
Yeah.
And the lad come on the field.
Yeah, it was. So he, I think he came over after and said, I literally, to this day, I'd never seen the lad until he was literally there. And I was gutted because the goal went in, because we were 1-0 up, and I think it was the 77th minute they equalised. So I was, you know, when you let a goal in as a keeper, you're sort of like, you're deflated.
Even if it's not your fault.
Yeah, you're sort of deflated a bit. So you're like, if anyone touches you, you'll go, sort of thing. So I literally didn't see him. Till he was there, and he's caught his light with that bit, but it hit my nose as well. And
it's a fan that's run around it for anyone who's not seen it.
I just didn't know. It was like I didn't know what had happened, and then obviously I fell down, and then I've heard all the stuff behind the goal and everything like that. But yeah, and then you sort of come around and think, is that really just happened?
Yeah,
and then
it's not what you expected.
No, it's not. No, and so it was like shock. It was, you know, and then the last 30 minutes, I just wanted to get off the pitch. And then after the game, I think he said to me in the press, and he said, oh, I've been told he's gone down far too easy, and it's going to make the Leeds fans look terrible and stuff like that. So I just didn't, I was in that much shock, and I was like upset as well, really upset. So I just went into the dressing room and said a few words to him, and he was in his white pants. And
of course he was.
Yeah. He just come out of the shower. So I seen him walking over. I said, what are you fucking saying and all this? I said, you're always the same, you always fucking say things. And yeah, give him a shove, and he went flying over the tables. Yeah, and then all of a sudden I had about 25 Leeds staff and players just come in for me at the same time.
You in there
time.
On your own?
I was in there with the chief exec.
Right.
Yeah, Paul Aldridge. But then quickly, there's all police and that come in, they're in the tunnel and stuff, yeah, so I got dragged out. But glad I did it, because...
Yeah,
I can just see Warnock flying over a table and he's fucking
slogging down, yeah. 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 Oh, they were proper, like, yeah, massive. You know, the old, like, granny pants he had with there. But oh, he had a pair of them on there.
Pooey filming, though, coming out and saying that.
Yeah, it was. After the game. But he's done things like that in the past, and he says things. And he rang me a couple of days after and apologised and said, oh, I've seen it again. And he said, I just got caught in the moment after the game.
Well, that's good for him.
It's half fair play to him.
Yeah.
But did any more repercussions from that then? From
Yeah, well, there was. I mean, that was tough, but it was going back to Ellen Road was a nightmare. I think it was 3 months after. Because I actually looked for it after the game, and I was getting death threats leading up to it, saying if you do play in this game at Ellen Road, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill your family. You know, so there was a, like, I'd let us through the door, through the house. They had to put guards on the hotel room when, the night before the game. We stayed in Leeds in the night before the game, which I thought, big mistake. Shouldn't be doing that. Mm. So there was, and then there was, as I've gone out to warm up at Elland Road, the police, there was about four policemen come over to us and said, look, we've received death threats today at the game about you. So we're going to have to put armed police on each of your posts.
Honestly, there can't be many goalkeepers.
I only have a man on the post, front post for corners.
So this was before me warm up. So I'm thinking, oh, I said, I don't really want that. I said, listen, we can't not do it. So there's been threats made against you. So
armed police.
Yeah, so we're gonna have to put armed police on the thingy. They said they're undercover. Said they're undercover sort of thing, so you won't notice them, but they are.
You're undercover.
They are there for you.
Dressed as ball boys.
Just dressed as normal people, but he said they are there for you. Just say.
All right, so they're in the crowd.
Yeah, right. but they're there by the post sort of thing.
Is this armed police at a football match just mixing in with crowd?
Yeah.
That's madness, isn't it?
So
the madness thing about it is that it's necessary.
But
the
hostage, like for the whole 90 minutes, I got abused. Like, do you know when you're going? I mean, I got told that I couldn't go if the ball went behind the goal or into the crowd. They said, "Don't go, don't go and get it. Let the ball get thrown back to you, or let one of your other players go and get it." So it was.
So what did they believe that you'd done? Why with it? Why did they have problems with
you? Just because he's one of their own. I mean, he got locked up, didn't he? He got sent down. He got sent down for 6 months.
That's not your fault, though, mate.
But it's football fans sometimes, isn't it? I mean, Leeds is a hostile place anyway, isn't it? Mm. But it was. There was 6,000 at Hillsborough, but having 35,000 of them on top of you, I couldn't wait to get out of the ground.
That's
and then got told never to go back to Leeds again. I got told if I stepped foot in Leeds again, then I wouldn't make it out of Leeds.
Like if the Birmingham manager said when Grealish got done, imagine him coming out and going, oh, Grealish has gone down, made the most of it.
Yeah. Just trying to get one of our fans bothered him, isn't he?
Yeah, he's probably worse, Grealish is, because he didn't see any of that, did he? It was right in the back of his neck, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was... It wasn't a nice experience.
Did you have to go to court at all? Or?
I didn't, the club did. So the club went to court on my behalf.
You didn't need to get your version of events, did you? Everybody could see it, couldn't they?
Wasn't under any pressure then at Leeds? I'm just wondering if it were a nice way of getting on side with the fans.
I wouldn't put it past them, you know?
Yeah, the whole game was just, it was evil. Yeah, there was all chants going on and...
You win that second?
We lost 2-1. Yeah, lost 2-1. Yeah, I think we won 1-0 up as well.
The coppers weren't celebrating, were they?
they're probably shooting me in the leg. In pellet gun.
We're going to fit in.
Yeah, so I'm glad I've not had to go back there since, thankfully.
Yeah. We're not before a walk in Leeds then, lads.
No, I said that, didn't I, the other week? I said, no. No walks in Leeds. No nights out in Leeds. No.
We've had a couple of good questions from Tom Goddard, mate, asking your favourite gloves and kit.
Ooh, favourite gloves were Adidas.
Finger saves.
Oven gloves now, after that lasagna before.
Finger saves. So Oggy used to wear them. So when I moved to Liverpool, I saw him with Adidas. I was with him for about 10 years. So yeah, their gloves were amazing. What was your one's favourite?
Favourite kit?
Favourite kit? I quite like the pink one at Sheffield Wednesday, actually. The black and pink one.
They have stripes in the front.
I quite like that one, yeah. I don't like anything too loud. It seems to like,
Campos.
Yeah, I mean, I like the old green one back in the day. That was a keeper's kit, wasn't it? Green.
Always used to be green, didn't it?
Yeah, always used to be green, but yeah, I didn't.
Did you used to cut your sleeves?
Yes.
What was the reason for that?
Because my arms are skinny. Like, a lot of the goalie tops, they were baggy. So sometimes, like, I'll be getting ready, set for a shot, and they'll be going over my gloves. So they'll be like covering my palms. So,
like a wizard.
So I was thinking, if I have to catch a ball here, it might, skid off or whatever like that. So in the end, I cut them off, and then I wear Under Armour. So it's skin tight.
I always wonder why keepers did that.
Kez Billy Gaskell in my head then.
Somebody said about the hat as well, didn't they? The cap.
Yeah,
so
why do you wear a cap?
Just because I wore it for a game when it was sunny one day, and I quite liked how it just gave you that vision on the pitch. So you didn't see a lot of other stuff around you. So then I started wearing it when it was dull like this. Even I think I wore it in the rain a couple of times as well. People were like, is he all right? I think it made sense then when I come out and said I suffered mental health. Like, oh yeah, he used to wear a cap in the rain.
We can see it now. He was cut his sleeves. You used to wear caps in the rain.
Yeah, makes sense. But yeah, it just used to give me that vision. Like I could properly focus then. So yeah, I just carried on doing it. Yeah. I had the same cap for 15 years as well. A night one. Yeah. Oh, it stunk.
She still got it.
No. Yeah, I had to go. It was like, she went, that. Now you're finished, you cannot keep that cap. You know, it was stinking, yeah. No matter how many times she washed it.
And he's ended by thanking you for all your work on mental health. Bit by bit, stigma has been worn away.
Yeah, like I said, a lot of people do that. They come up to us and say, look, you know, I want to say thanks and stuff, but it's not about that. It's not, you know, I don't do it for gratitude or anything like that. I don't do it to somebody come up and say, oh, you're amazing, you're doing this and that. It's not about that. It's nice to be, you know, that it's appreciated, but it's more about knowing that I can help other people. That's what I do it for.
Mm. But I suppose it's that thanks. A lot of people reinforces that it, yeah. What you're doing is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I've had all sorts come up to us. I mean, there was somebody in the gym not so long ago before the lockdown, and a lady come up to us and said, look, just want to say, you know, you've helped my son no end. And I thought, he went, you know, he tried to take his own life, tried to kill himself, and then he's seen your documentary, he's listened to a lot of stuff, he said relates to a lot of it. And I thought, you know, she must be talking about a lad that's in his 20s or something. This lad was 9 years old and tried to hang himself at the home. And so it's stuff like that that, you know, you think, yeah, I'm glad I did come out and say something now.
That's possibly your own therapy as well.
Yeah, it is. Massively.
Your own therapy as much as helping other people.
I have to talk about it. If I don't, you know, if I don't do anything or don't go into different places, like I do a lot with the foundation now, Liverpool Foundation, going into different places, mental health, into veteran centres, and obviously not so much now because of the lockdown, but if I don't do something like that every few days, I don't feel right. Mm. You know what I mean? I just feel as though I'm not slipping back, but I need to do it, sort of thing. Mm. Like footballers need to play football, I need to do that.
Yeah.
You don't need to.
I want to. I want to. Yeah, good shout, yeah. Yeah, want to, yeah.
Cheers, mate.
Tom, man, loved it.
Yeah,
enjoyed that, Chris. Thanks, mate.
Bit of a deep one, wasn't it?
We'll be coming again when we come back. Maybe next time we go.
You're on again.
You're welcome anytime.
Yeah, top man. Top man, Elliot.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.